Let's go up to our ring announcer.
The following podcast is scheduled for one episode and is our vantage point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Outside, we couldn't see it from our vantage point.
Wrestling fans, and welcome back to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. This is episode number 36 on this beautiful Monday, June 19th, 2017. I am Joe Murata. Over here is Michael the Hitman Quinn. How you doing, Quinn?
Howdy.
How you doing, man?
I'm not a hitman. I'm a heartbreak kid.
Sorry about
that. You got
that.
It wrong.
Sorry. And you're unpredictable sometimes.
Sometimes unpredictable. Sometimes a big daddy.
Big Daddy Michael Quinn.
Yeah.
Folks, we're glad to be back with you here, of course, to talk about the world of retro wrestling. We hope you had a good week. We want to thank the one and only Scott Keith for joining us this past Thursday for a very special episode of our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Yeah, it was a special one, all right.
Very royal.
Kingly.
Yes, regal. There was Art Donovan.
There's always Art Donovan.
There's always Art Donovan. So thank you, as always, to Scott Keith for making a special appearance, and the Blog of Doom, of course, for their support and listenership. Quinn, there are some places to find us. We obviously are on SoundCloud. That's our normal feed.
Yeah.
But there's other places to get us. Where could those be?
Well, you can always go to the old Apple Music / iTunes / the thing that has the Apple on it.
Mm-hmm.
And over there, you can get the podcast. You can hit the subscribe button, mm-hmm. and then you don't have to ever worry about like looking for this again. Like, how do I find Google? What's OVP? Wait, is that it? Like, you know, doing that whole thing.
Yeah, it sucks.
So it'll just like poop the podcast in your phone and you're done.
That's well said, Quinn.
Yeah. And then over there, you can also leave a review.
Yes.
And we love the reviews and it helps other people find out about this show.
Yeah. And maybe one day we can even top that Colt Cabana.
Colt Cabana or like any of these other shows, Jim Cornette, whatever.
One Sean day we'll Mooney be, and Duggan.
Yeah. One day we'll be better. But you can do that and leave the review.
Yes.
And you can also get this podcast on Google Play Music,
mm-hmm.
Stitcher, mm-hmm. Blueberry.
Who cares?
Tune in and tune FM in. Player and all that crap.
Auto radio.
Auto, yes, auto. I always forget about you, auto. One day they're going to come for us and be like, hey why are you disrespecting the auto?
We're nice to you guys, you know?
Yeah.
A great place to find us, placetobenation.com. What do you think of that place, Quinn?
I've heard of them before.
Yeah.
They're a podcast network of wrestling things.
And they're very nice.
Yeah, they're very nice folks over there, mm-hmm. and they have a podcast, Place to Be podcast.
Sure.
And it's got the old wrestling on it, just like us, but it's kind of different.
Yeah, because they go
really
through
the same.
Chronologically, yeah. Right now they're in mid-86, kind of.
Yeah.
And it's nice. You know, it's a nice thing.
Nice little thing, and you can listen to that also.
You can listen to it twice.
Yeah.
And check out some of their other podcasts. And I don't want to fail to mention that you can find us on Twitter at OVP Podcast. And what you could do there is you can let us know what you think of this episode. You can let us know what you think of the topics that we discuss. Or just tweet stupid crap at us. We're fine with that, too.
We also got one other avenue of discussion.
Yes, we do, Quinn. What is that?
It's the Facebook group.
The group!
Yeah, so you can join the Facebook group. You just type, tell Mark Zuckerberg in his search bar of magnificence, just type OVP podcast.
Yes.
And you'll find us.
We're there.
There's the page for the show, and then there's also the Facebook group. Sign up for the Facebook group, hit join, we'll approve you,
we don't care. Yeah. And you can talk to us about whatever you want on there.
Yeah.
It's a fun time. And, Quinn, there's a few other things. We have our website, ovppodcast.com. You could just, it's basically our home base where you get links to everything.
Yeah, even all the stuff we just talked about, it's there.
Yeah, so just
that's
go
kind of all you need to know about that thing.
So we could just shorten this and say, go to ovppodcast.com. Yeah. And if you want to email us, of course, at ovppodcast@gmail.com. That is ovppodcast@gmail.com. And one last thing, get all this out of the way here. We have merchandise, Quinn.
Yes, we do.
We have the OVT.
The OVT, yes.
And you can find that at teespring.com. That is T-E-E spring.com/OVP podcast. And we have a nice little logo t-shirt there that you can buy. A hot item for the summer.
Yes, it's a short sleeve shirt, so you won't be hot. And it's white, too.
And it's white.
Yeah.
And it says our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast.
We're going to need a black one for the winter, I think. Maybe a coat of some kind.
A coat,
OVP coat. Yeah.
Well, let's coat this podcast with some great retro wrestling topics, Quinn.
Yes.
You have the privilege of starting today. We're going to go deep diving, so let's get our scuba gear on. Thank you. And Quinn, you're the one picking the destination today. So where are we deep diving to, good sir?
Okay, so last week we reviewed a really boring superstar show.
And
it got me thinking of a topic when you're thinking of like really deep and like how did this happen kind of things.
Sure.
It's like it's very complicated, but I figured we'd dive into it. The collapse of the golden era of the WWE.
Woohoo.
WWF at the time, I'm sorry.
The collapse of the golden era.
Yes.
Well, let's enlighten our fans real quick on what the golden era was. It's generally agreed upon that between like 85 and 1990, wrestling was at an all-time high in terms of popularity. Like, unprecedented high, I should say.
Bigger than it had ever been.
Bigger than it had ever been at that point. One of the notable people of that era, the face of that era,
yes,
was Hulk Hogan.
Right.
We've mentioned him before. We know who he is.
He makes a couple Rushmores every now and then. Yes. I don't know if he's made a Death Valley yet, but...
I don't think so.
Yeah, maybe not.
But Hogan had crossed over into the mainstream, which was something that hadn't happened in quite a long time in the U.S.
Generally, wrestling and mainstream are not the same thing. They're not even remotely close.
They don't go together. I know Gorgeous George in the 50s, he crossed over into the mainstream, but you're talking 30 years back at this point.
Yeah, it's a long time. By the 1985, 83, whatever.
The mid-80s, let's say.
Yeah, mid-80s.
The time of WrestleMania 1 is a good benchmark, but... Even Bruno, for all his, you know, North American WWF popularity, he was not a cultural icon or anything.
No, I mean, he claims he had dinner with Frank Sinatra.
Sure he did.
Who cares?
Sure he did. But Hogan was, you know, a guy that was on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Right.
A wrestler.
Yeah, on the cover. A professional fake wrestler. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hogan was a guy that was on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
On MTV.
Yeah, and he made that guy fall over or whatever.
Richard Belzer.
Yes.
For those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, we had a very ugly incident here last week on the show. Hulk Hogan and Ms. T were here, and Hulk Hogan did a demonstration, and he hurt me real bad. I split my head open, and I was knocked unconscious and so on.
Yeah? Good!
Belzer's great talk show, Hot Properties. But anyway, so...
That was mainstream.
Yeah, very mainstream. It's on Lifetime, I think. So I think it was. So anyway, the long and short of it is, with the Golden Era, is between that period of time, the early, mid-80s, the Vince McMahon era, the Hulk Hogan era, the WrestleMania era, wrestling was at a peak that it had never seen before. Hogan Andre on national primetime television in February of 88 drew... I want to say like a 33 rating.
Yeah.
I recently watched it last night,
believe it or not. And it says right on the banner, the most watched wrestling television thing ever. Like basically on WWE Network. Like it says that.
And just to give you an idea, folks, this was on NBC, not in the SNL time slot for Saturday night's main event. This was primetime.
Like 8 o'clock
Friday
or something.
Night.
Yeah. Like
at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous that pro wrestling would be on NBC.
Yeah. In the 80s, the Friday night time block was actually competitive because, you know, you had the TGIFs of the world and all that. So
yeah, you had, and people, obviously, this is before the internet, people watched TV.
Yeah, they didn't have their computer to go on to, you know.
There's no YouTubes.
Right, exactly.
But anyway, another thing that was really a mark of this golden era is they were so popular and selling so many tickets, they could run 3 simultaneous circuits at one point.
Right.
The A, B, and C. World champion would headline the A, Intercontinental would headline the B, tag champs could
headline the C.
Simultaneously!
Yeah, you had, and also the influx of talent into the World Wrestling Federation at the time is a big key to all of this. The national expansion is what makes a lot of this possible.
Yes.
It's the idea that, hey, this guy that was big in just Memphis, he can come over. Like, he was like the world champion over there or something.
Sure.
And now he's just like in the mix. Like, he might not even be the champion, you know?
A guy like Rick Steamboat, who was high profile before going to WWF and after.
In his area only.
In his area, right? Yeah. Or Tito Santana.
Yeah. Even like crappy Honky Tonk Man was a big deal where he came
where
from.
Where he was,
yeah. Exactly.
Continental, I think. Yeah. I don't remember.
But that's my point, is that you had a collection of main eventers, essentially.
Hogan being the template, because he was an AWA main eventer.
And if you only saw them on the national scale, you may not think of them as main eventers, but you really, like Junkyard Dog, like he was a main eventer where
Ted
he came from.
Ted DiBiase. Yeah,
exactly.
Jim Duggan.
Yeah, so, and these are just the mid-card minor players are main eventers.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Even some of the goons that Hogan would fight, like One Man Gang was
King
a
Kong
big deal.
Bundy.
Big Boss Man.
Right,
all
exactly.
All these guys.
Yeah.
And of course, the cornerstone of the 80s boom, as far as a feud is concerned, was Hogan Andre. I know we talk about it sometimes.
Yeah.
But WrestleMania 3, whether it was 78,000 like Meltzer says, or 93 like everyone else says,
right,
doesn't matter.
And the cornerstone of the later part of that era is the Macho Man and Hulk Hogan.
Absolutely.
Right.
That was another big feud.
But we're here to talk about the collapse.
So what happened in 1990?
This is the beginning. I don't say it collapsed right here.
This is the start of it.
Yes.
The first thing I'd say, Quinn, and tell me if you agree, is Hulk Hogan decided he was going to finally drop the title. You know, Vince was ready to have it passed on to the Ultimate Warrior, who was a very popular wrestler.
Yeah, there was no indication to really think, hey, this Warrior guy's not going to work out. I mean, he was so popular.
Extremely popular.
Like, it was like, even though people, like Scott told us that they didn't think Hogan was going to lose to the Warrior, it's not like people were like, well, that's stupid when he lost to him. It's like, this guy's awesome. Like, he's super popular. That makes sense. Like,
and to put it in perspective, folks, you know, the match they had at WrestleMania 6 in April of 1990 at Sky Dome, no one's booing during that match.
No. That shows you how over everyone is.
Exactly. Hogan, up to that point, any match he was in the national level, I'm sure there were house shows where there were snarky crowds and stuff.
Other
but
than
really,
the Macho Man, I think when Macho was healed, there was a couple
was a
of Macho, a smattering of Macho fans out there.
But Hogan was always fighting a big heel.
Right.
That Hogan was supported almost 100%. It was a 50-50 split. It made sense. It looks like a good idea on paper. It sounds like it would work. All right, the new face of the WWF for the 90s.
Yeah, exactly.
The Ultimate Warrior.
It's conveniently 1990, exactly.
Exactly, and Hogan was going to go make Suburban Commando, take some time off.
Right.
Game over. You lose.
What happened around this time, and it's not just the Ultimate Warrior, but Quinn, I'd say that was a catalyst for house show attendance dying off.
Bullseye, smartass.
Yes, it was a catalyst for that. It was that I think these audiences were just accustomed to Hogan closing out these shows, and, you know, the Ultimate Warrior was a different animal, per se. It wasn't the same thing. It was kind of weird them trying to shape him as this mega face, too. Like, you know, he fights for good and this and that, and it's like, well, his character is he's like a maniac or whatever. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
He wasn't necessarily ever some kind of upstanding guy.
You fall further than you ever have been. You will fall, Owen Hart.
There's stuff that the Warrior does uncharacteristically, like hang out with kids. Like, it's not the Ultimate Warrior.
They humanized him.
Yeah, it's not the Ultimate Warrior like I envision. It's this guy that, you know, they're holding him back in a cage somewhere in the back, and he's going crazy, you know?
Absolutely. Well said, Quinn.
Yeah.
And at the same time, here's one thing to remember. Wrestling had been so popular since about 85. The WWF had been very popular. That's a long stretch of time for a pop culture phenomenon.
Yeah, that's not just a fad. That's like a movement or something.
It was yeah, exactly. By 1990, I think even if Hogan had stayed on top, it still would have eventually run out of steam pretty soon.
Well, it's really the whole approach changed. And it wasn't at 90. I always say this to you, that you can notice things around the end of 92.
Yes,
I agree. Where, like, it's almost the look and feel of everything starts to get into this more minor league looking thing. Like,
there's a few reasons for that, Quinn, that I can perceive anyway. One is, obviously, Hogan was taking a lesser role in the company starting in 90.
Right.
Was he the champion sometimes still? Yes. But he was not doing the Hogan 80s schedule performances, and he wasn't as popular.
But up to 92, he could draw. Like, I mean, even at WrestleMania 8, people were, like, excited.
Oh,
they
were
like, oh, is this Hogan's
last
final match?
Yeah,
it's
allegedly.
Like, this was a big deal. Like,
of course it was.
Yeah, that sold out the Hoosier Dome.
However, as the 90s progressed, not only was Hogan not as popular on a national level as he had been, he was still a name and everything, right?
Right.
But what you had going on was by 92, guys like Roddy Piper, Jake Roberts, Macho Man to an extent, were all downplayed, and then the other two actually left the company, Jake Roberts and Roddy.
Yeah.
So you got three of your big 80 stars not in a prominent level anymore.
Right.
And what you're doing in is bringing in new guys that we love, Shawn Michaels, you know, Bret Hart, Undertaker, to take their spots. Razor Ramon, who the hell is that?
You know who I am, man? I am Razor Ramon.
But you also have to remember, too, they started not only downplaying them, but at the same time, and this is even for the serious people, they were putting them in like really goofy like yes. situations. Like I always think back to like something that starts to reek of minor leagues, and I know a lot of people like it, mm-hmm. but it's that whole Jake the Snake like with the Ultimate Warrior and like yeah. voodoo and like
stupid.
They're in like a magic bunker or something, like yeah. all that crap.
I'm sure you got an uneasy feeling. You maybe even feel a little sick right now.
You're right.
Yeah.
I know also in the early 90s that NBC lost interest in carrying Saturday Night Live, which
right.
was a huge primetime exposure because once every few months it would take the spot of Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
Did I say Saturday Night? I meant Saturday Night's main event.
Right. Saturday Night's main event would take Saturday Night Live's spot.
Correct. So they lost interest in carrying that.
Yes. And 92 is the end of Saturday Night's main event.
It was. So that's, again, you got national exposure now gone.
Right.
Right. They're relegated to their cable network, USA,
yes.
and the syndicated, which wherever that is and whenever mm-hmm. that airs. And really, they had run out of steam in my mind. That's one of the reasons that the glory years, you know, the golden
right.
age, the boom started to collapse. They just run out of captivating ideas.
Yeah. And one other thing to add, it's like this was something that once the ball started rolling
yes.
as far as like falling off, like all of a sudden then the product looks smaller. Right. They're in smaller arenas.
They can't afford bigger arenas. They can't draw them,
right? And then you have the perception that this is going downhill. Mm-hmm. And then, like, it's just you're watching this and you're seeing the stars are not, they're not quite as good as Hulk
yeah.
Hogan.
Who is this guy?
Yeah, it's like, and as much as people like Bret Hart, I don't think Bret Hart is perceived like
Hulk Hogan.
Like Hulk Hogan, right?
No, not at the
and
time.
That's the guy that they were, that was the, to me, the first guy they passed it off, like, without, independent of all this Hogan stuff.
Yeah,
like,
sure, sure.
So,
not only that, Quinn. Think about the 9-year-old kid that got into wrestling in 1985.
Right.
Now that kid in 1992
right.
is 16.
Yes, and this is another factor.
He's interested in other things
well,
now.
Well, they want edgy stuff, right?
Yeah.
And that's eventually what they got to, but they not during that dead period
right.
from 93 to 96.
This 16-year-old is probably watching Ren and Stimpy
or
for
ECW
laughs.
If he still likes wrestling.
Yeah, but I'm saying even if it's not wrestling, it's something else, right?
Right?
One other factor before we run out of time here on
yes.
this segment, because Lord Alford is getting very upset.
Yeah. He always,
remember him?
He always is if we're running over.
We didn't forget about him, folks.
Yeah.
Is the steroid allegations that kicked up starting in 91. The trial
yes.
didn't happen until 94. But that whole period had Vince so preoccupied.
He was not only preoccupied, he was spending money to defend himself.
And spending money on the World Bodybuilding Federation, too, which just made no sense.
Yeah, I don't know if he was trying to make a parachute or something if they took down the whole wrestling thing. But,
I guess,
like,
I don't know.
But the point is that his attention wasn't there. He wasn't building the stars that he should have been doing because he was defending his life, basically. Would have
yes.
gone to prison forever.
And honestly, that was one of the reasons you saw the downplaying in 92 of Hogan, of Warrior,
right.
Bulldog gone, Warlord, Barbarian gone, all these big, larger-than-life
right.
characters, which is how Vince had built the product in the 80s.
Right.
Now, in the face of all these allegations, you have to build it on your regular-looking guys like Shawn Michaels, like Bret Hart.
Yeah.
So your larger-than-life heroes are gone because...
Now you got these cool, smaller guys, right? That's
yeah.
kind of how they looked at it.
And it just wasn't something the general public was...
They weren't ready for it till late 96, I think. It took a long time to set that all in. But the point is that to me the collapse is around 92, late 92, early 93.
The major collapse, I'd say, is right around that time as well. I know a lot of people will argue that, you know, 92 is bad, they're wrong. 91 is bad, they're wrong.
Yeah.
91 and 2 are great
yeah.
in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Now they might not be as popular.
It's the last hurrah.
It's the last hurrah. By 93,
we
are veering into this very strange territory.
Where it's Ica Pro and the Market Square Arena.
And Tatanka.
And Jerry Lawler in a weird cape. Like, it's
and the
just,
Bushwhackers.
Yeah, it's just different.
And Mabel.
Yeah.
And it's just, again, it's stupid the same way a lot of the 80s stuff is stupid, but it just doesn't have that same broad appeal.
Yes.
The way the 80s stuff did.
Mm-hmm.
And that led us to reviewing that Superstars from October of 94.
And I guess that takes us all around.
Takes us all around. So, folks, we're going to take you to Mount Rushmore and Death Valley. But first, we will be back right after this.
Well, the baseball season doesn't open until next week. College basketball's Final Four is not till tomorrow, and the hockey players are on strike. So there's time to catch up on professional wrestling. That always strange world of hoaxers and hoaxers has been hit now with some real scandals. Bob Paul reports tonight's Eye on America.
This is to sport what Jim and Tammy Baker are to religion, what Ripper is to wine. Very distant relatives. The winner, determined by the promoter beforehand, never lays a hand on the bum. Only the spit is real. And yet this hideous combination of sideshow, acrobatics, and good guy versus evil has been boffo.
Hello, wrestling fans. This is Quinn. I'm really not supposed to be doing this right now. I kind of ran away. Joe's in the garage doing stuff during the break. I said something really stupid. I said the Market Square Arena when I was talking about shitty arenas. That was where the main event was with Andre and Hogan, so that was really inaccurate. I kind of meant like the Cow Palace or something like that. So I just wanted to get that out there, and I'm not really supposed to be doing this, so I'm going to cut away now.
Oh,
shit. See ya.
You're listening to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast, the fastest growing weekly episodic retro wrestling audio podcast in the world.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast, here on episode number 36, Monday, June 19th, 2017. Quinn, it's our last episode, technically, of the spring. It'll be summer next week.
It's not summer yet. It's like 90 degrees outside.
It is hot.
Yeah.
It is hot. Folks, it is time for Mount Rushmore and Death Valley, where each week, Quinn and I will put four of the best of something onto Mount Rushmore, and four of the worst go into the desert of Death Valley with Wile E. Coyote or somebody. I don't know.
Is that his name?
Wile E. Coyote.
Wile E. or is it Wild E?
Wile E. Coyote.
Okay, we got it.
So, Quinn, I have the honor of picking this week's Rushmore and Death Valley.
Mm.
And I think our fans will appreciate it. I think you'll appreciate it. We don't touch upon this territory too much here. It is the Mount Rushmore and Death Valley of Islanders.
Ooh.
Wrestlers from the islands.
So, like The Rock.
Yeah, The Rock would count, yeah. Actually. Folks, you know the island wrestlers. Yeah, your Samoans, yeah. Your head shrinkers, your Jimmy Snookas.
Yeah, Snookas.
Snookas. It's a long-standing thing. It goes way back. I mean, you can think of even Peter Maivia.
Yeah, exactly. That's like the furthest back.
Curtis Iaukea, yeah. Right? Guys like that.
They're the pioneers of the Samoan families.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, it's a staple. It's still got people lingering around, you know, from time to time.
Yes.
From that period. So I wanted to go over some of the best from the islands. That could be Samoa, it could be Fiji, you know,
yeah.
Tonga.
Yeah.
And some of the worst. So Quinn,
or Florida sometimes.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Quinn, you have the first pick. What do you got?
Well, I think it's obvious, and I kind of might have spoiled it, but the George Washington would have to be The Rock, right?
I would say so.
Like, I mean, The Rock, that's the weird thing about The Rock is he's technically like
he's
an islander character,
and he's half Samoan,
right? He's half Samoan, but like when he came in, he was like, you know, like my ancestors and this and that. Like he's got like dangly things all
yeah,
over him, and like
they really played it up that he was a third generation superstar, you
right.
know, the grandson of High Chief
yeah.
Peter Maivia. And wasn't his mom the booker or something?
Yeah, his mom was like the booker of island wrestling or whatever it was. I don't know.
Liam Maivia, right?
Liam Maivia, yeah.
But I would say The Rock qualifies, right?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, The Rock, it's interesting just on an Islander perspective of The Rock.
Yeah.
He did kind of, when he got older, he had the tattoo.
He did the Samoan tribal tattoo.
Samoan tribe, which is like a real thing in their culture.
It is.
Like, it's like you have to like, I forget, there's something like you have to tattoo your whole body before you die or something.
It's something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgive us, folks, for getting it wrong, but it's something to that effect.
Right.
And he never shied away from his Samoan heritage.
No.
He never downplayed it. He might not have talked about it all the time, but he never hid from it.
But what was awesome about The Rock is that, sure, he came in as this respected generational whatever
yeah.
he was, like from the islanders, like the Samoan family or whatever, right?
Sure.
And then like he turned into this cool heel character,
yeah.
which and it was more about like showy, like stupid shirts and stuff and like
catchphrases.
Yeah, and catchphrases and sunglasses and
people's elbows and eyebrows.
And eyebrows, yeah. So and he became the people's champion, which, you yep. know, I don't know, you know, I don't see Haku doing stuff like that.
And unquestionably one of the most popular wrestlers ever.
Right.
A mainstream crossover, Dwayne Johnson.
And by the way, I made Doom.
I want to say 10-time WWF champion?
It was a lot. Yeah, I can't think off the top of my head.
I don't know. A lot of times. Yeah.
Highly respected as far as his promo work, his character, even his wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, he had some great years as a wrestler.
Yes. He was actually, I think he's one of the best Samoan wrestlers ever.
I really think so. I think he belongs on Mount Rushmore. I mean, because you can sum it up, really, you can sum him up in two words. The Rock.
Yes, exactly.
So we put him on, right?
Yep.
All right.
You know, Joseph.
Yes.
I think with this, there's The Rock and then there's the rest.
I think that's a great way to put it, Quinn.
Yes.
There's The Rock and then there's the rest. So can I give you one?
Sure.
An island member, folks. We're not just doing Samoan. It just so happens that a majority of them come from Samoa.
Right.
But Jimmy Snuka.
Jimmy Superfly Snuka. Yes.
He would have to qualify.
He's, to me, the closest thing in popularity to The Rock. I like the way he works, to be honest with you. I like the... Not only can he do the barbaric...
Crazy Islander
heel thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you could also be sympathetic towards him. And or you could be waiting to see him do a crazy feat, like jump off a cage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love Jimmy Snuka in that respect. Yeah.
And he worked well as a heel in the earlier part of his WWF career.
He worked well as a face, too.
And he worked well as a face.
I mean, some people forget that there was a reason why he was there at WrestleMania 1 with Hulk Hogan.
Yes, and Mr. T, yeah.
Right, like, he was super popular. Like, and he'd been gone for a bit, and, like, Snuka's and Hulk Hogan, like, holy crap, like, this is a big deal.
And Snuka, of course, had that feud, that big feud with Roddy Piper in 83, 84, so this was a big deal.
Yeah, him being there, it's like usually an afterthought,
yeah.
But for the people watching it at the time, it's like, holy crap, Jimmy Snuka's back and he's going to help exact revenge on Roddy Piper.
Sure.
Like, this is awesome. Like,
and no matter what became of him in a lot of ways, but wrestling-wise, we'll stick with.
Just wrestling-wise.
With his 89 return and his sporadic appearances after that,
right?
There is no denying that the Jimmy Snuka from like 1982 to 1984, 85 was a huge deal. They called him the Phenom, for crying out loud.
Yeah. And then the Phenom beat him, and that was the end of him in WWF.
Quinn's referring, of course, to The Undertaker defeating Snuka at WrestleMania 7, but I would have to put him on as well. We might cruise through the Mount Rushmore here. I don't know.
We may, but there might be some arguments, but I would put Snuka on.
I would have to put him on, too. He was Jimmy Superfly Snuka from the Fiji Islands.
Yes.
So it's not all Samoans.
Exactly.
So we're putting Jimmy Snuka on?
Yeah, definitely. No doubt about it.
Let's do it. Well, Michael, it's your pick.
I got an interesting one.
Go for it.
He's a guy that has Samoa in his name, but he's not related to any of those other Samoans. Samoa Joe.
Yeah. You know what?
I mean, he's like...
As a wrestler?
He's just getting started in the WWF now.
Now.
And he's like a legend already. He's amazing.
He came in, like, predicated upon his name. Like, Samoa Joe is coming to the WWE or NXT.
Yeah.
Samoa Joe. People knew who he was.
Right.
He was never mainstream either.
The fact that that guy made a reputation in the indies so strong that he just has to show up in the WWE in the modern era. Like, now...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's something. That's something to be said. And I think a lot of people overlook his Ring of Honor work nowadays.
Joe versus Punk?
Joe versus Punk and just his various feuds with all sorts of people. Daniel Bryan.
Daniel Bryan. And, of course, one of the major highlights of TNA
was
Samoa Joe.
He had a big feud with Kurt Angle.
Mm-hmm.
He was TNA champion at a very young age. Like, he had come in, and I remember he initially had a great feud with the Fallen Angel Christopher Daniels and AJ Styles.
Of course.
So this is a guy that's, you know,
been around the block.
He could quit today and he would be a Hall of Famer. Like, he really could.
I think so, based upon his independent career and his TNA career alone.
Right.
Let alone some of the good stuff he's done in NXT and WWE.
Yes.
He's been good.
Now, usually Samoans were portrayed with that kind of power, but there's something more vicious about Samoa Joe that I always liked about him.
And I agree.
There was something about that, like, there was moments in Ring of Honor where people would be doing something pretty bad,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden, not maybe sometimes without music, Joe would come with his trademark towel,
yep.
and you were like, oh no, like,
I know
Samoa Joe's here.
Right. The name still carries weight and value amongst wrestling fans today.
Right.
And this is a guy that made his mark more than 10 years ago.
He's retro now, kind of, in a weird way.
And I really think we're hard-pressed to find two more that would kick him off of this, but let's volley a little
bit
to make sure. I'm going to throw a very stupid one at you,
okay,
but I know we both like him, and that's The Barbarian.
Yes, I was hoping you'd bring up The Barbarian.
Yes, of course.
Now, he is Samoan, right?
Tongan.
Tongan, or is he Fiji?
I think he's Tongan.
Okay, yeah. The Barbarian.
But I could be wrong.
Once again, like Joe, pure power.
Yes.
But impressive. Almost a little agile, I would say.
He had some surprising agility.
Right, and when his move, that clothesline, is just unbelievable.
I love his top rope clothesline.
His top rope clothesline is something. He has a very impressive victory over Tito Santana at WrestleMania 6. Go watch that match haven't seen it in a while. It is awesome. Like
5 minutes of fun.
And 5 minutes of fun. And after you watch it, you're like, how did this guy not get pushed?
I know.
Like, you're like, and they even, like, I remember the announcers remarking that, like, this is a really good acquisition by Bobby the Brain Heenan. Like, it was
spent
like
a lot of money.
Yeah, but it came off like, holy crap, like, yeah. The Barbarian is good.
He got The Barbarian and he was good.
Yeah.
Now, he obviously changed his gear over after that to antlers.
Yeah, he was more like a...
And fuzzy boots.
Like, they took The Barbarian thing, but they went with more of like a Roman era Barbarian, not like a Samoan Barbarian or a Tongan Barbarian.
I would say a low point for him, Quinn, is when he was Sione the Head Shrinker.
Yeah, that was 95. Kind of a transition period, because he would go over to WCW and kind of actually have a really awesome kind of tail end of his career with Haku.
Great tag team, underrated tag team.
Yes.
A fun time in 96, 97.
As much as people don't remember, they were really over.
Yeah,
like,
they were.
I remember a really good match between them and Harlem Heat, and it was like both the crowd was just losing their crap. Because Harlem Heat, they were pretty big dudes.
Yeah.
You know, the Faces of Fear are pretty big dudes.
Yep.
What's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No, they were over. They were fun.
Yeah.
They were rough guys. So I like The Barbarian. He's not better than Samoa Joe, obviously. Do you have one for me?
There's Haku. I mean,
yeah.
He had a very impressive career. Let's put it that way.
He did. He's well regarded as one of the toughest men outside of the business as well.
Right. If I recall, what was it? Was it the Macho Man that swore by taking him along if they were in an NWA territory?
Yep. To watch his back, he infamously bit the nose off of somebody.
Yeah, he's kind of crazy. That intensity would come through in the ring, too.
Yeah, and when he wanted to try, he could be very good. When he wanted to not try, he could be very bad.
Right, but it was more about, there was some kind of levity to him.
Yeah.
There was some kind of he had a presence,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
And sure.
He might have been a smaller, like not as tall, but he was like a pit bull, you know?
Yeah. He would slug it out with you.
Yeah.
He could wrestle, but he was just a rough competitor, you know?
Yeah. It was almost like there's almost like a charm to the fact that you had to wake him up.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like this sleeping giant, right?
Sure.
Like, and he's in a small package, but he's a sleeping giant.
Sure.
Like, and you don't mess with him because he'll really like...
He can fuck you up.
Yeah, he can fuck you up. Like,
and I know you're a big fan of his initial run as Meng when he was the bodyguard in the suit
that
in WCW.
That's so fun. Like, because it's like they finally like took the actual reputation of him in the backstage and applied it to the character, and I thought that was fun.
He would just be in the background in a suit.
Not to mention he had a run as like more of a hardcore wrestler later in his career too.
The big afro,
yeah.
And then he came to WWF actually in 01.
Yeah.
Briefly.
I know. But again, I don't think he touches Samoa Joe.
He doesn't.
Do you think we should just put Joe in and figure out the last spot?
Yeah, you know what I think? I think we should.
Yeah.
I can't think of two other people that would fit in above Samoa Joe.
Right.
So I think we do the right thing. We put Samoa Joe onto Mount Rushmore. I do have one for you, though, Quinn.
Sure.
Maybe for the fourth spot. I know you don't like this guy, but I think he could still be a contender. Yokozuna.
Yeah, I mean...
He was Samoan.
If we're talking... But he was hailed from Japan.
Quinn, The Rock was from Florida.
Right.
Come on.
But I mean, what I'm saying is his heritage wasn't... It was the wrong heritage.
I understand that, but I'd rather do real Samoans that weren't hailed from Samoa rather than fake Samoans.
Okay, if you're going to go that way, then, I mean, Yoko would definitely qualify. He's a world champion.
World champion. He was from the Anawai part of that whole Samoan family.
Yes.
You know, there's that and the Fatu section of that family.
Yes.
There's a whole family tree. You can look it up. It's very convoluted.
Yes.
But Yokozuna's in it. He was in the WWF. He was never billed from Samoa, obviously.
Yeah.
But he was before that when he was Coquina Maxima and a few other things. I mean,
nobody really knew about AWA
and a few other things when he was a little bit younger and a little bit thinner.
He weighs in at 482 pounds. He is the Samoan wrecking machine, Coquina Maximus.
But Yoko, I know you're not a big fan of him as a worker, Quinn, but he was unique.
No, I don't have a problem with him, but I do... Another Samoan comes to mind that actually might trump Yoko.
Okay.
Umaga.
Oof. Eddie Fatu. Yeah.
Really good. Really, really surprisingly good worker. And just...
Sadly no longer with us.
Like, died way before... He could have still been going. Like, he was good.
He was good. You and I remember watching with you in 07, 08, 09.
Yeah.
We loved Umaga.
To me... The modern-day equivalent of Umaga, who really kind of took his spot in my eyes, if you want to make a good comparison, Rusev.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. That's a good point.
In a lot of ways, Umaga and Rusev kind of are like a...
The just yelly kind of squat,
they seem
stout character.
They seem threatening.
Yeah.
You know?
They don't normally win the big one.
But they're always looming, right?
Always looming.
I don't know, like... Umaga versus Yokozuna. Like, I think that's like the top two I have left because there's a lot of junky Samoans.
As much as I love
Islanders. Yeah.
And as much as I love Barbarian and Haku, I think Yoko and Umaga are better than both of them.
Yeah.
Overall.
Mm-hmm.
Accomplishments and just overall appeal.
Yeah.
Umaga had a great finisher. He had a helicopter slam.
He had a great IC title run, too, in a time when that wasn't... Yeah, like, he was the champ for a while.
Great little gimmick.
Yeah.
He didn't talk.
It was simple.
Stupid face paint.
Like, he had the Cuban manager.
Armando Alejandro Estrada.
Always, in a time where, like, managers weren't a thing, it's like he had a real manager who had cigars on him all the time and stuff.
It was funny.
It was funny, yeah.
My name is Armando Alejandro Estrada.
But Yoko was a world champion twice.
Yes.
Had a great repertoire of power moves that looked like they hurt. You know, his belly to belly, his leg drop, the bonza drop, the splash.
His sheer size is what put him over. Like, how do you beat this guy? Or you just knock him over.
Or you body slam. Yeah. Or throw salt at him, actually.
Yeah, that too.
And for his first year, I'd say he was a pretty good worker. He really did get too big.
No, he couldn't do anything.
And he eventually couldn't do anything. But his first year, he was pretty good. 93, he was pretty good as a worker. He wasn't bad.
Yeah.
He beat, under whatever circumstances, Quinn, he did beat Hulk Hogan.
Yes. I guess, I mean...
He beat Bret Hart.
Yeah.
He did.
I know, but he also presides over a very...
After the golden era.
exactly what we were talking about before.
I know.
I know Umaga doesn't preside over a great era, but it's better than that.
True. And Umaga did have a fantastic match in 07 against John Cena.
Yes, the one where the turnbuckle came off.
I think it was an I Quit match or one of those type of things,
and,
you know.
And John Cena choked him out with the turnbuckle.
Unbelievable.
The rope or whatever.
The rope
the
from
ring
the turnbuckle,
rope.
Yes.
Look at the face of Umaga! He's being choked out there! Look! And even a monster's got to breathe!
Awesome match. Umaga was a great worker, like surprisingly good worker.
Stunningly good, yeah.
Yes. And he was originally in 3 minute warning.
Right, which is weird.
Out of nowhere.
Like, with Rosie, right?
With Rosie, yeah. Also no longer with us, right?
Yeah.
They're both gone. It sucks.
Yeah.
And Yoko obviously gone. Snuka gone.
Yeah.
But, not to get depressing here, but yeah, I mean, so our criteria is what? As a wrestler or just overall legacy? That's the thing. Because
why don't we just put most entertaining? Like,
well, then it's probably Umaga. Then
he was so entertaining.
He was, and it is entertainment, pal.
Yes, I mean, I would rather watch. I could go back, and I really haven't. And I should is go watch an Umaga match again because he was just great.
Yeah,
like
it's been like a decade now.
Yeah, I think it's old enough.
It's like, retro at this point. Yeah, I mean, you know, I have a big soft spot for Yoko.
Yeah, I know you do, but I know you also have a big soft spot for Umaga. Too.
And Umaga's a much more fun person to watch.
Yes.
Yoko wasn't fun. He was boring.
Yeah.
And he was a big heel. Umaga was the heel that you kind of liked because he was good.
Yeah.
You
know? He's kind of snuck in there. He was always in the background, but he was just cool. Like, I don't know.
The Samoan Bulldozer, they used to call him, remember?
Samoan Spike, his finisher. Yeah. That taped up finger.
He had a great elevated Samoan drop, too. He had so many cool moves.
Yeah. The throw you in the air and then catch you into the Samoan drop.
That.
Yeah.
We used to mark out for that, remember?
It was so good.
We were cheering him versus Batista at that one WrestleMania.
We were cheering him versus John Cena.
Well, a lot of people were.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? Umaga.
Yeah.
We're doing it.
Yeah.
He's appearing on a Rushmore.
Wow.
So it's Umaga. So to recap, because one of our friends told us that we needed to do that more, Donnie. We've got The Rock, Jimmy Snuka,
Jimmy Snooky,
Samoa Joe,
Somalian Joe,
and Umanga.
Yep.
As Regal would say.
Umanga himself.
All right, well, that's good. I think we're off to a good start there. And since you got to pick first, Quinn, I'm going to pick the first of the worst. And it's not pretty.
Oh, well, there's a lot of these. A lot of these are bad.
Yeah. I'm going to offer up CB Afi.
Ooh, you suck.
Yes, I was hoping you would bring him up. The fake Jimmy Snuka. Yeah,
better known as not Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I mean, I just saw a botch of him today, like just floating around on Twitter. Like I was like scrolling my feed and like,
God.
Yeah, he was awful.
He was basically brought in, folks, and I'm sure if you were a fan at the time, you remember, to replace Jimmy Snuka. In fact, at first he was called Superfly CB Afi.
That's awful.
From the Fiji Islands, weighing 245 pounds, Superfly Afi. All right, the cousin of Snuka, there he is, yes sir.
Don't ever do that again.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much to say about CB Afi other than he was a complete failure.
Complete ripoff.
He was a jobber within months, I believe. Like,
yeah.
I don't remember seeing him beat anybody other than like other jobbers.
I remember we reviewed All American from 86 a while ago, and we saw a match where it was CB Afi versus heel 1986 Bret Hart, and the crowd was on Bret Hart's side, and so was Gorilla Monsoon.
Yeah, everyone, nobody liked this guy. He was awful, too. It's not even just to like not liking him because he's like an imitation of Snuka. It was like, no, this guy just is not good.
He wasn't good at wrestling.
Yeah, he's one of the worst workers I've ever seen.
Right. It's like if you have a really good mailman for a while.
Right.
And then you get a new mailman, and he's delivering you the wrong person's mail.
The next day, like,
or
late.
Or dropping it on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
You don't like him. It's not because he's not the other mailman. It's just because he's bad at his job.
Right.
Because the mail never stops. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. There's never a let up. It's relentless. Every day it piles up more and more and more, and you got to get it out. But the more you get out, the more it keeps coming in. And then the barcode reader breaks, and it's Publishers Clearinghouse.
All right.
And CB Afi, that's why he would fall into that Death Valley, is because he just was bad at his job.
He was bad at his job. Do we even need to volley here, or are we just putting him
just
in?
Just get him in there.
All right, so CB Afi, number one into Death Valley. By the way, I did hear a comment or two expressing some disappointment that we have removed the die soundbite.
Oh, I was wondering when that would come, actually, because I knew we had some fans of that.
Don't worry about it, okay? Maybe it'll return for season 4.
That makes me excited, too.
You know, because I know it's very fun.
Yeah.
Die.
Die.
Maybe it'll come back. But anyway, Quinn, you have a pick?
Yes. Another one that immediately comes to mind. A man by the name of Manu.
Manu. No, wait. Which one was he again? Samu Jr., right?
I don't remember who the hell he's related to. He's probably related to The Rock because that's the only way he would ever even get in the company.
Okay.
Manu, what the hell with Manu?
Okay.
Like,
what I know about Manu and what I remember is he joined like the second version of the Legacy.
Right. He was in the Randy Orton faction.
After the DiBiase Jr. and Cody Rhodes version.
Yeah, it was when they started recruiting like anybody that was second generation or third or fourth or whatever the hell he was.
And Manu, I think, was Samu Jr. I just want to confirm that. very rare that we look anything up on here, but I really want to know.
Joe, he was like nothing. Like, there was just nothing. He was so bad.
Yeah, he was. No, you know what he was? He was Offa Jr.
Oh, sorry. Jeez.
He was terrible. He had no personality. He couldn't work.
No.
He didn't look good.
No.
He was horrible.
And if I recall, like, I feel like the last time I ever saw him ever, and this might be just a weird recollection, but I swear he was just getting beat up backstage or something, and I never saw him again. Like,
I think you're right.
That's, like, literally the last thing in my mind about Manu.
Well, didn't Orton reform the original Legacy and they beat the shit out of the new Legacy? Isn't that what happened?
I don't remember. It was really shitty, though, and I just... He had no impact at all. I don't know why the only reason why he was there is because he was related to someone, and that was the angle they were running.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, that's it.
He wasn't good.
No, and
he really wasn't.
He looked out of place too in his time, because if I recall, he just dressed like almost like a head shrinker or something.
He did. He dressed like
he just had the black like up tights. To his like knees or whatever tights.
Barefoot.
Yeah. Barefoot.
But he was not good.
He was just generic and nothing.
Yeah, you know what? He's a great contender. I do want to throw this out there, and
sure.
I'm not going to put him in, and I would hope you don't, but I know our fans, if we don't talk about this guy, are going to get upset.
Sure.
Roman Reigns.
I mean, I was thinking about bringing him up.
He's not Death Valley material, Quinn.
I mean, here's the thing.
Yeah.
With Roman Reigns, he really shouldn't be this bad.
Oh, come on. He's not that bad. He's not. Don't look at me like that. Is he worse than Manu?
I mean, okay, Joe, last week,
yeah.
If you recall.
Yes, I'm listening.
Do you remember Tony Atlas, that whole thing?
Yeah, I remember Tony Atlas,
and
that whole thing.
And how the reason he was in was because he should have been better, and being somewhere and falling might be worse than never being anything at all.
Quinn, we're really going to put him in the same category as Siviafi and Manu?
Joe, he's the most hated figure in professional wrestling in the last, like, 20 years, and not because...
I know.
Like, he's like a heel or something. He's hated in a fashion that is like X-Pac.
Oh, well. I don't put him in.
Fine. I mean...
I can't put him in. And his career's not over.
It isn't over just yet. Unlike Manu.
Yeah, unlike Manu and Siviafi.
Yeah.
I can't put him in, but I did want to mention him so people don't think we forgot.
What about, what was that guy in Deuce and Domino? Which one was the Samoan?
Oh, Sim Snuka.
Yeah.
He was Jimmy Snuka's son. I don't know if he was Deuce or Domino. Which one was he?
Yeah, I don't know. He was one of them. Might have been Domino. I don't know, but.
He was Deuce.
He
was Deuce.
His name's Deuce.
He was in the tag team of Deuce and Domino with Cherry.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
Yes.
And then, as part of the Manu version of Legacy, he became Sim Snuka.
Yes.
Because he was the son of Jimmy Snuka. Another terrible one.
Yes.
He is worse than Roman Reigns, Quinn. You can't
I'll
even.
Give him that.
Roman can work.
Now, who's worse, Manu or Sim Snuka?
They're equally bad.
Well, Sim Snuka did have a tag belt for a little bit. I mean,
true.
Kind of better, I guess.
What about Prince Iaukea? The son of Curtis Iaukea, the master.
Here's the thing, is a lot of these Islanders, like the bad ones,
yeah,
they're like 100% junky.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say that Prince Iaukea was 100% bad, because when he was Prince Iaukea, he actually was kind of awesome. Like, he was a good cruiserweight, and
okay,
like, he was reputable. Then the artist formerly known as, and all that crap.
Stupid gimmick.
Yeah, that's what took his career down the toilet.
Okay. You know what? Yeah. He
I mean, if we need to fill space, he would definitely be in there.
Right. He's not worse than Manu or Sim Snuka.
No.
He's definitely better than the two of them. I think Manu and Sim might just both need to go in, honestly, but you can keep throwing them at me if you have them.
What about Rosie?
Rosie was,
remember, he was the superhero guy?
Yeah, Rosie was the other guy in 3 Minute Warning, right?
Yeah.
I feel bad when people die and we, like, say things like that, but, like, honestly...
I mean, it's a retro podcast show.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're right.
People may perhaps be dead. Sorry.
No, you're right. You're right. I can't argue that. Yeah, Rosie was, like, the opposite version of Umaga, basically.
Yeah, he was...
Not good.
Yeah, just wore big shirts and sucked.
As much as I hate to say it, we might have to consider him.
Yeah.
I still don't know, though... Manu. I mean,
yeah.
Manu
yeah.
And Sim Snuka. Deuce. I mean,
yeah, his name is Deuce.
Yeah, he dropped a deuce. All right. Those are the two worst I can personally think of at the moment.
Here's one that might be controversial.
Go ahead.
Well, there's two
Go ahead.
In this class, but Tamina and Nia Jax.
Whew. Yeah. You know, yeah. A lot of people have the feeling, and sometimes myself, that Nia Jax only has this job because she's related to The Rock in some form.
I don't think she was ever good. Like, yeah. I know, like, there's people that like the idea of, like, they want an awesome Kong replacement is what they really want.
Sure.
And that's what Nia Jax provides.
Sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine and all, but I will say this. She's better than Tamina. Tamina literally can't work.
Yeah.
Like, and she's dangerous on top of it. Like, she's, like, physically, like, can hurt someone by accident.
There is a reason that Tamina is just not anything.
She's still,
you know,
in the company somehow, but like she just
does anyone
sits,
know that?
She just stand. No, she's like back on Raw or something. Like as of this recording, yes. But like I don't know why she's there. But
yeah, I don't know either. Tamina's worse than Nia Jax.
Yeah,
she is, right?
Okay, so I want to put Tamina in the nomination category with Manu and Sin Snuka.
So basically, anyone related to Snuka sucks.
Yeah.
Anyone pretending to be Jimmy Snuka sucks.
But there's a lot of these Rock fakers out there, too. What about Rikishi? Joe, let me make a case here for Rikishi.
Okay.
Okay, so there's only two periods in his entire career where he's ever liked, I guess, was the butt phase.
Yeah, the butt phase.
And when he was in the Head Shrinkers.
And even then, people weren't like huge fans of Fatu.
No. And let's go into his bad faces. Making a Difference, Fatu.
Did he make a difference?
No. And that's why he's in Death Valley.
I don't know.
And, wait.
Okay.
And also, I did it for The Rock. I did it for the people.
That's not his fault, though. That was the book.
I did it for The Rock. I did it for the people.
Also, why the hell is he a Hall of Famer? If we're talking about him in Death Valley.
Because Coco Beware is a Hall of Famer?
No, he's a Hall of Famer because he's related to The Rock. He is the ultimate, to me, of the related to The Rock privilege crap.
Really?
Yeah.
Fatu?
Because he was like retroactively like made great because of The Rock.
No, Quinn, don't forget that for a period of time, and it was a short one, he was extremely over.
Yeah, and he had a good match with Triple H, but I mean, other than that,
but that's still more of an accomplishment than anything Manu, Deuce,
mm-hmm.
or any of those guys. Prince Iaukea even ever did.
Right.
And Tamina.
Yeah.
So we can't put him in. Mm-hmm. Come on. We're talking about Manu and Deuce. Manu? Yeah.
I mean, no.
Manure?
I just wanted
to. Is that what that's short for?
Manure and poop.
Yeah,
Deuce.
Really?
Yeah.
Can we just put them both in and get this the hell over with?
Fine.
Because honestly, they're terrible.
Yeah, they were nothing.
All right, so we're going to do a number two here.
Yeah.
Dropping a Deuce.
Yep.
So there you go. CV Afi.
You could have just put a fart noise for that instead.
Manu. And Deuce.
Yes.
Okay. That's
what
three.
A list so far.
So if we're gonna talk about the final one, Iaukea is like him and Rikishi are like better.
Yeah, I guess.
But Rikishi's at the top in good way, I mean.
What about just like this might be controversial, but what about just like Afa?
Like, or Sika.
Yeah, or them. I mean,
yeah, like, what did they do that was so...
So, the Wild Samoans were very popular, I guess, in their time.
And very unique, to be fair.
Here's the problem, is I remember Afa or Sika, or maybe even both of them, just lingering around in, like, the late 80s, like...
Well, no, kind of. What happened, basically, is the Wild Samoans in, like, 80 to 83 were feared heels, right? Because
right.
It was a unique gimmick at the time.
Right.
The hard-headed Samoan gimmick, Savages, you know, yeah. Lou Albano managed them. And of course, everyone remembers the famous moment where Rocky Johnson and Tony Atlas beat him, blah, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
They briefly turned face in like 84. They feuded with Fuji and the other idiot, Saito.
Saito, yes.
And then Afa left. Sika came back in like 87, 88. Remember he's at WrestleMania 4 in
yes,
the Battle
this
Royal?
Is the, this, okay, then it is Sika I'm thinking of. And
yeah.
He's like in that Battle Royal just doing nothing. Like,
yeah, he was crappy.
Yeah, and he always was crappy. I think they even had him fight Hulk Hogan at a Saturday Night's
yes.
Main event or something.
He was basically a
like,
big
why?
Fat Hogan heel.
Yeah.
I don't know, Quinn. But again, to me, him and Afa are interchangeable. Do we just put the Samoans in as a tag? No, we can't.
No, we can get... No, because the Samoans as a tag team were good. It's on their own.
Yeah, but they weren't trying to be single stars.
I don't know. What was the one that was the manager of the Head Shrinkers?
Afa.
Afa.
Does that put him in? What about Curtis Iakea?
The master. See, we're going to get so much shit if we put the master in.
Yeah, we might as well stay away.
I mean, that master stuff's pretty bad, though. Like, I'm not going to lie.
It is, and honestly, I mean, who gives a shit? But at the same time, we probably don't know enough to say one way or another.
And I've heard he was a great teacher.
He was a master.
He was the master.
And I don't like to pretend that we know more than we do.
Yes.
So let's just not touch him.
We'll just leave him alone.
We'll just leave him alone.
What was the, not Haku, but the other islander?
Tama. Sam Fatu. He was Salofa Fatu, who's the Rikishi. He was his twin brother.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't bad, though. He was just insignificant.
Yeah.
He was also the Samoan Savage
Deuce is insignificant also.
Yeah, Deuce.
I don't know. So
I would say,
what about Tamina? I think Tamina's kind of scaling.
I would
this.
Say like, Tamina. That's where I was
holy
going.
Holy crap!
Because she's not good.
She's had enough time. I swear she's been with this company since like 2008 or something. Like
it hasn't been that long.
It's been long though. It's been long enough.
It's been at least 5 years.
Yeah,
at least that.
And she never was good ever.
She's worse than Roman Reigns. Can we agree?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure she's hurt people before.
Like, well, even so. But she's worse than Prince Iakea.
Yeah.
Worse than Rikishi.
Yep.
I don't have a problem putting Tamina in. And folks, I forgot to mention this at the top of the segment. We may be forgetting people.
Right.
Just not even thinking of them. There's a lot. We might not even be thinking of them.
Yeah.
So let us know what you think of your Mount Rushmore and Death Valley of Island wrestlers.
So, Tamina. Is that confirmed?
I think so. I really do.
Yeah,
I think
I can't think of anyone worse than her.
Not being sexist, not being anything, but she's.
Hey, we included male and female in this.
Yeah, it's true.
Endeavor here.
Yeah, you're right. I think Tamina can go in. And folks, again, you might think of someone that we haven't. So let us know at ovppodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
You can tweet at us at ovppodcast. You can leave a comment on our website. And in the meantime, let's put Tamina into Death Valley. So, that is our Mount Rushmore and Death Valley of Islanders.
Yes.
Let us know what you think. We love to hear from you. We really do mean that. We try to respond to every single comment or email or tweet that we receive.
Correct.
And Quinn, when we come back, we're reviewing something, mate.
Yes, we are. Crikey.
Crikey. After this.
And his opponent, from the other side of the track, weighing in at 242 pounds...
I'd just like to say that from now on, I'd like to be introduced by my real name. I am the son of WWE Hall of Famer Jimmy Superfly Snuka. And my real name is Sim. Sim Snuka.
Nobody cares! Nobody cares!
Hey, it's Sean Mooney. I may no longer be in the event center, but if I was, I'd be talking about our Vantage Point Retro Wrestling Podcast. All right, boys, let's get to it.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Time for our last segment. Quinn, we're reviewing something.
We are.
This is uncharted territory. Actually, I'd say uncharted waters for us, because we hopped the pond for this one.
Yeah, we got in our sailing ship and went over and invaded Britain, I guess.
It was nice, because you wore your Gilligan hat.
Yeah. They're like, why aren't you wearing a tricorder?
Great joke, Quinn.
Yeah.
So
history humor.
Yes, very, very well done. So what we're reviewing here. Okay. World of Sport Wrestling. Now I need to explain this, because this is a little complicated the way we did this, and Quinn and I had to learn stuff. We hate doing research, obviously.
Yeah, and I mean our UK listeners are going to be like, how did you not know this, mate?
Yeah,
but like,
exactly.
We're going to be like, we have no clue like with this. So.
They're going to throw their crumpets at us for not knowing this. But What we're reviewing today, you can find it on YouTube.
Yeah.
I'm not saying where.
Yeah.
Just look this up if you want to see it.
Right. It's around.
World of Sport Wrestling number 53.
What that 53 means, I can't tell you.
We don't quite know. Here's what we do know. World of Sports was a show that aired in the UK from 1965
right.
until 1985. Now.
That's a long time.
It's a very long time. It was like a 4.5 or 5 hour show on yes. ITV.
I guess what it's the equivalent to the wide world of sports that ABC used to put on in
correct.
The 70s and 80s.
That's absolutely right. So you had a variety of sports showcased on this very long program.
Yeah.
One of those quote unquote sports was professional wrestling.
Oh, I consider it a sport. So
Vince McMahon doesn't.
Yeah. Well, he's an idiot. Sorry.
And one of the notable feuds was the UK's own Big Daddy versus the UK's own Giant Haystacks, also known, of course, as Loch Ness.
Yes, from the Dungeon of Doom.
Yes.
One of the master's many
cronies.
Yeah, cronies to fight Hulk Hogan.
Ugh. But anyway, what we got into here was something Quinn and I had never, ever seen before. And that's refreshing sometimes, Quinn, because we did Superstars last week. We have seen all kinds of crap from that era.
Yes.
We know that era inside out. You know, we've seen yeah. stuff from WCW that we know really well
mm-hmm.
and a bunch of stuff. But this is uncharted, and I'm very uncomfortable
yeah.
reviewing
this. It was so uncharted that we had to ask friends across the pond, like,
yeah.
what? When was this? Like, we still can't, like, really figure it out.
In fact, from what I understand, it's a composite of a few different years, you know, just different segments here and there.
Which we didn't know when we were watching this.
No, we didn't. So we want to thank the Midnight Rider for providing us with this information.
Yes.
Not with the video.
Right.
For the record. But anyway, Quinn, let's get to the show here. So this is British.
Yeah.
That's
it's
number
very,
one.
Very British.
And we're not.
No shit, Sherlock.
Yeah. Although they do use the same colors in their flag.
They
so
do.
There's a lot of, it looks like it could be United States stuff.
Especially in the intro. It's like a very patriotic sounding intro. And Big Daddy, of course, is in the intro.
What I didn't get is, why is there stars? Like, there's no stars on the British flag. Like,
aren't there?
No.
What's a British flag?
The Union
like?
Jack.
There's stars on that.
No, there isn't.
Okay.
There isn't.
I believe you.
Yeah.
I believe you.
It's red, white, and blue, but there's no stars.
Anyway, when you asked me, why are they showing Hulk Hogan in the intro?
They definitely showed Hulk Hogan, like, in the white, like, trunks from, like...
85.
Yeah, from, like, Saturday Night's Main Event or something.
Why?
I don't know.
Capitalizing, cashing
I
in.
I like this note. I'm sorry to rip it off, but it said it reminded you of Major Dad.
Remember that show?
Yes.
Remember the intro to that
yeah,
show?
Yeah, it was a lot like that.
So then our first match, we go right to it,
mm-hmm.
is Wild Angus...
Yeah, wild Burger Angus.
Versus, I have no idea, what was it, Honey Boy, Zumba?
Honey Pie. I thought it was like Wild Honey Pie because of like the Beatles song.
On the White
it's
Album.
Like, well, it's British, so, you know.
It was Honey Boy Zumba, actually.
Okay.
And the ref had a big purple shirt
with what we think is his name on the back, Max Ward. Max Ward.
I don't remember.
But that could have been an advertisement based off stuff we saw later. I'm not sure.
That could be like a sneaker company.
Yeah,
in
it could
Blackpool.
Be like a local shoe store. I don't know.
And he had a big purple shirt with painted on suspenders or
yes,
something.
Yes, he had like, but only on the front, just like two lines, red lines going up the side of his shirt.
And I noted the announcer sung it, they're falling asleep. Quinn, you said it was like golf commentary.
Yeah, I felt like I was watching someone putt like in the Masters or something.
Wild Angus, with his long hair and his beard, often tempting for his opponent.
Anyway, the ring looks like it's made by Hasbro.
Yeah, it looks like a toy ring.
Maybe Galoob.
Although I did respect the, they had the Japanese-style turnbuckle mm-hmm. pads. That wasn't that bad.
That's true. But seriously, what's with this purple shirt?
Yes.
And this ref.
It's very loud.
It's very bothering
but
me.
But it's very official, too, because it has like the logo of the company or whatever this is on the corner.
It does. It's just Barney the Dinosaur colored.
Yeah.
It's very purple.
It's very purple.
So the announcer says, it's wise to do what the referee says.
Realizing that it's wise to do what the referee says.
Yeah, no shit. Like, that's wrestling. You don't want to get disqualified.
And I think I see Margaret Thatcher in the front row.
And I just said to you, no, that's how all old British women look. They have the, like, puffy hair. Like, I mean, I know that.
Your grandma.
Yeah, my grandma.
So, grandma.
Like, that's just an old British woman thing.
Okay, fine. I thought it was Margaret Thatcher.
It's not Margaret Thatcher. Sorry. Sorry to burst your bubble.
I'm very, very
The PM
sorry.
In the crowd. Piper for PM.
Yeah, Piper for PM. The crowd sounds like it's studying for a final.
Yeah, it's super quiet. It's, like, so quiet.
Very quiet.
And I don't know what to make of this so far.
This is brutal so far.
Yeah.
This match, we're 3 minutes into the match. And it's just leaning on each other. These two guys, Angus and Honey.
Yeah, and I say to you, like, is this what the UK dealt with? Like, no wonder they love WWF so much.
Right.
Like, to this day.
Actual
like,
stars.
Yeah, like, for 20 years since 1965, watching people lean on each other.
And golf commentary and stuff like that, and Margaret Thatcher in the crowd. Wild Angus looks like Dutch Mantel, like a ripoff of Dutch Mantel. And he sounds like the number six at Burger King in
04. I know, yeah. Or like the McDonald's Angus burger. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And Quinn, you said to me, you didn't know if you could make it through this match. Why are the commentators whispering?
Yes, I seriously thought we were going to have to like turn this off.
Like 4 minutes in.
I was like, I didn't even know what to say to you. Like, I was just like, what is happening?
Why are we watching guys lean on each other? And by the way, folks, if you don't know who Wild Angus and Honey Boy Zimba are, we didn't either. If you do, like, really good for you. But if
you're
you don't,
the super fan of all wrestling,
Wild Angus seriously was probably about 50 something years old here, and so was the other guy, baby.
Yeah,
and they were old. Wild Angus, I mean it when I say he looked like a Dutch Mantel ripoff.
Yes, he looked like Dutch Mantel, and it's weird because I felt like they were treating Zimba like he was a youngster, but he looked like he was 56.
He looked old also. Yeah. So this was great. Angus falls over after body slamming Wild Honey Pie or whatever.
Yeah.
And the crowd applauds a clean break. So they do react to something.
Yes. This is where it starts to get a little interesting.
Whisper number one, the commentator calls a wrist lock a stranglehold.
Was there even two people in commentary? They're both, if there's two, they were both whispering and they sound exactly the same.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wrestling.
It's hard to tell.
This is exciting.
This is very exciting.
But he calls a wrist lock a stranglehold.
Yeah.
You know, it's a Gorilla Monsoon would at least be happy.
He would.
That he didn't call it a wristwatch.
Yes.
Because you
don't
need,
call it a wristwatch.
You need to know that. That's not what he said. You need to know the difference. So then the dinner bell rings to end round one.
And then I say, oh God, there's rounds.
Yeah, it's British, remember? Remember the AWF?
So clearly here we are ultra confused on what the rules of this are,
because they don't explain them. They just assume that you're,
well, they assume we've been watching since 1965.
Here's the
so.
thing, they don't expect when they made this that two asshole Americans
would watch it on the internet
for their podcast.
Yeah, exactly. And
so they didn't need to explain the rules.
Right, exactly.
It'd be like if every Seinfeld episode they like came on camera and was like, Kramer is the wacky neighbor.
Right, they just have to like have a preface beforehand. Yeah. But this is the water break right here.
Yeah, they take a water break.
They take a nice water
break. Very nice. Yeah. Round two begins and we are 8 minutes in, and the most exciting thing so far has been the round change itself.
Yes, that was the only thing where I was like, oh, something?
Yeah, water.
Like, literally nothing's happening, and we're hearing, like, heavy breathing. Like, it's so quiet that you can hear the breathing.
Big chop by Angus, and a war dance then by Honey Boy.
He's doing the one step.
Not the two step.
Not the two step. He just keeps, he's like tapping like one of his toes.
So Angus hits him with a kick to the sirloin. Snapmare. I'm noting the moves because there's nothing else to talk about. We usually don't do moves.
Yes, we usually don't do moves, but
there's nothing to say.
Nothing's happening here.
The commentators aren't helping.
They're not even saying, they're not calling anything.
Barely.
Like, yeah.
Barely. Oh, there you go, Alan. Right.
Yeah. Someone in the crowd coughs and everyone just gets quiet. Like, hey, there's wrestling.
That was weird, right? Yeah. They're like, ahem.
And
everyone's
then
like, oh,
I know. I also know here. I said, this is the worst wrestling. We finally found it.
Worse than anything we've reviewed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this was awful.
Yeah. This is really, really, really bad.
So we get more absolute silence from the crowd until Angus fouls Honey. He like kicks him in the balls.
This was good.
And then the ref publicly reprimands Angus or something. Quinn, can you elaborate on that?
So the ref like reprimands him, right? But then all of a sudden, the like ring announcer gets on the mic and is like, the ref is publicly reprimanding for lewd content or something. I don't know what he says, but basically they have to like announce that he's giving him like a slap, like an admonishment. Was yeah. that how you say it?
Admonishment.
Admonishment.
He's like publicly censuring
yeah,
him.
Yeah,
it's
know? Like, what is this, the Senate? Like, it's so
Seriously.
Confusing.
Was he going to impeach him next? You yeah. know, I'm surprised they didn't make him wear a dunce cap in the corner.
Well, if you get disqualified, that's an impeachment in England. So,
so the dinner bell then ends round two. The reason I'm saying the dinner bell, because it's just like a dangly little bell. Yeah, it's not a ring bell.
It's like when you go to a hotel yeah. and you ring for service.
But like, it's like ding ding ding. Yeah, yeah. It's like, not a ring bell.
Yeah.
Anyway, Angus wipes his face with a really dirty beach towel.
Yeah, it's like a multicolored beach towel. Like, it's not even just a white towel.
And round three starts, and Honey comes out of the gate swinging.
Yep.
Angus fires back with an open hand. The commentator says, that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Open hand. At least the rules apply here. There's no weirdness there.
So finally, a double underhook suplex gets the win for Angus. Pins him.
Yeah.
But this was weird.
The ref.
He doesn't count with the pin like on the mat. Like,
he's just standing up and he goes 1, 2, 3 like he's like an ump or something.
Now, if you remember, Quinn, when we watched UWF.
Yes.
We had the lightest three counts.
Yeah,
remember?
It was the.
This tops that.
Yeah. You didn't even hear. I did the count. That was the UWF count.
This guy just says the numbers.
Yes. He doesn't even get on the ground. He's not bothering with any of that.
He's just like, it's
like the laziest reffing you could think of.
1, 2, 3
Basically, yeah.
This guy wins. So then the ring announcer gets in. He looks like Orville Redenbacher, by the way. And then he announces that Angus... Wait a second. Wait.
Yeah.
Round four?
Yeah, what is it? What?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
More of this?
I think...
He pinned him.
I don't... Why does there need to be more? He beat him.
He pinned
with
him.
With an underhook suplex.
Oh, my God. Round four begins, and Honey gets a pin with a flying body press 45 seconds into round four.
And then, of course, ring announcer comes in, and then I'm like, wait, do you have to win two rounds like Street Fighter or something here?
England!
Yeah, apparently you do, because we go to round five. Seriously? Round five?
Round five on like a TV show.
Oh my God.
I always say there shouldn't be rounds, like at all, like on TV, only if you were doing something special. So I guess, essentially, the rules here is it's like 2 out of 3 falls, essentially,
basically,
right? Like that's what this is.
There were no falls the first two rounds.
Right. Now, there's a maximum of six, they say.
Six,
I think
they
do say that.
They do. So, Angus with a punch and then a European uppercut, which I guess you just call a normal uppercut.
It's just a regular uppercut here.
In Europe.
And now, at this point, I say to you, I have to admit, I'm moderately intrigued.
You were. And as you say that, Honey Boo Boo here pulls Angus's beard to counter the Irish whip.
That was kind of good.
Shouldn't it be an English whip?
Well... they don't like the Irish, so I guess it...
Northern Irish whip?
Maybe that makes them Angus a heel.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, he's Scottish.
Yeah, so...
That doesn't matter. He's not a Scottish whip.
Right.
Anyway, one step again, Quinn, by Honey, but he misses a flying headbutt and he falls out of the ring, so we get a body slam by Angus. Wow, a power move.
Yeah, holy crap.
A body slam? Yeah. I'm surprised he didn't pin him with that.
And he throws that guy out again.
He throws Honeygrams out again.
Yeah.
Then an overhead backbreaker gets a submission for Angus.
Whoa.
Please be it.
Yeah.
This was the win. Now, I like the ring announcer.
In round five, the standing submission, and all by two falls to one, is the World Angus.
And I like that he comes back in every single round break.
Right, to give us the update here.
Very official here. Angus cuts a promo that I cannot understand because I don't speak British.
Yeah, I literally have no idea what he said.
Yeah, or Scottish, whatever the hell this guy is.
That's my new partner. He's a Chinese guy.
So that was very interesting, Quinn, that match.
Yes.
That's our first match of this.
Starting to get intriguing, I'd say.
A little intriguing. Apparently, according to our inside source, the Midnight Rider, this was from like 1980 or something, this match. This is a very old
match. Okay.
So we get our next match here. Greg Valentine, not that one.
Yeah, some other guy. He looks like Zack Sabre Jr.
Dressed as Sergeant Pepper.
Yeah.
he has like a Sergeant Pepper jacket.
Yep.
He is Greg Valentine, the farmer's boy from Millbank, West Yorkshire. A great favorite, as you can see and hear.
versus El Diablo.
And he looks like Mil Muertes from Lucha Underground.
Yeah. Hey, Devil, you know, Thousand Deaths.
Yeah.
Very similar concept here. Now, we're at a different arena here. We didn't know this at the time, but this is a different... This is from, like, later in the 80s.
Yeah, this is not even the same time.
It looks a lot cleaner. It's more exciting.
Yeah.
Different arena. Ring announcer is much better. You can understand
him. Glittery red and blue coat.
Very glittery.
Yeah.
This match is scheduled for no falls.
Okay. What?
Now, this made us listen.
Yeah, now this, all of a sudden, this show.
There's no falls?
Yeah.
The only way to win is to knock your opponent down 10 times.
What?
I've never heard of this.
I've never heard of this. Although, I actually, this is a great match type.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
The ref has, I noticed this, Quinn. All black outfit with a white bow tie. Very dapper.
Yeah, the dapperest.
Much better than the purple shirt fake suspenders thing.
Way better. I guess that's because this is later and they realized we don't need purple shirts.
Crowd chants, we want Greg.
And we're confused because Greg Valentine?
Who wants Greg Valentine? Yeah. Either version. Yeah. This is not Greg Valentine. We mean this.
Yeah, Zach Saber Valentine.
Yeah,
whatever.
I don't know who this guy is.
Yeah.
So we get two quick knockdowns by Diablo to start.
Yeah.
Valentine does a cartwheel, and guess what? That counts as a knockdown.
Unbelievable.
Quinn.
Yeah. So now Diablo's got like a 4-0 lead, like
he gets
straight
another
off the
one,
bat.
4-0?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then a backdrop makes it 5-0 as an on-screen graphic helpfully points
that
out.
That was nice of them. And then, okay, this was kind of interesting. Valentine just makes this, like, quick comeback.
Really
and,
quick.
And I swear, it's just out of nowhere, it's 6-5, Valentine. Like,
it's
he's
amazing.
Ahead. Yeah.
Valentine, 1 point.
5-1 to Diablo.
Valentine, 2 points.
5-2 to Diablo. 5-3, that's better, Greg.
3 points. 4 points
now to Greg Valentine. And 5 each now, 5 each. 6 to Greg. He's overtaking him after being 5 down, not bad.
Just boom, 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 knockdown, knockdown, 6-5 Valentine.
Yeah.
And Quinn, you said to me, you love how the ring announcer sounds like an auctioneer.
It's like, one fall there, and it's 4-3, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know
what
I mean?
He's awesome.
Like, yeah.
5-5, we're tied, you know. 6-5.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Then it's 7-5 as the announcer gets really excited.
Oh, yeah, and the fans are going nuts.
This
is
awesome.
And the auctioneer is just like, and it's 7-5 now.
And then a big body slam gets another one for Valentine. So now it's 8-5.
Postings won't help him.
Yeah.
That might, though. Nicely.
Valentine, 8 points.
Yes. And then an elbow knocks him down. It's 9-5 Valentine.
Holy crap.
And then a big clothesline gets the win for Greg Valentine. 10-5.
Not that one.
Not Greg Valentine. Yeah. Not the hammer. Then a bunch of kids rushed to like ringside to shake his
hand.
What
is he, Bob Backlund?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That was awesome. What'd you think of that?
Freaking amazing.
That was so fun.
Holy, this show took a turn, Joe.
After like round 5... After round 4 or 5 of the opening match, this became very interesting here.
Yeah.
And then the best part is we clip to another match.
Yes.
Back to like the early 80s again. I think it might be the same arena as earlier. It's not the same taping.
It looks like it might have been similarly.
Similar.
Same time-ish.
And this is scheduled for 6 5-minute rounds. So at least they tell us that this time.
Right. So they tell us this, and now all of a sudden, like, we're hyped after that thing, and we kind of liked how the other one ended, and, like, we're, like, now excited for, like, a 6-round fight.
Yeah,
like, we're
this is serious.
Yeah.
And it is serious, Quinn, because it's the world lightweight champion, Johnny Saint, versus the challenger, Bob Anthony.
Now, I think I've heard of Johnny Saint before.
Yeah,
I swear.
Like, you probably have.
I want to say something with NXT. Seriously. Like, or maybe he was mentioned on that UK thing.
Possibly.
I've heard him talked about before, but I've never seen him in action.
No, I hadn't either. We're back to the quiet crowd style again, and the purple shirt ref, he's not wearing a purple shirt this time.
Max Ward is back.
The announcer, a better announcer than the whispery guy from earlier, welcomes us to another wrestling session.
Hello again, Grapple fans. Good afternoon to you, and welcome to the Assembly Hall, Walthamstow, for another professional wrestling session.
Yes. That's so classy.
Very classy.
Yeah, and this is where I start to feel like, I feel like I'm watching like a wrestling club or something. Like almost like it's soccer or like like
rugby.
Rugby or like
something
like,
very exclusive.
Like something exclusive, and you know, these are like the best guys, and they've been admitted to the club, and like we're gonna watch them fight
Exactly.
You know?
Neither man, though, has knee pads, but who needs knee pads when
you're
doing
this? These
are
very, like, Rick Martel-looking people.
Tony Gurria, Rick Martel, come to mind.
It's almost like Tony Gurria fought Rick Martel because Johnny Saint has that sailor tattoo. Yeah.
The crowd is dead silent during all the chain wrestling, only interrupting with respectful applause. So, Quinn, you said it's like a Japanese crowd.
It's an English-Japanese crowd, yeah.
It's very, very respectful. It's not that they're silent because they don't care.
No, they're, like, paying attention. And, like, they actually go on the audience and, like, nobody's not looking at the ring.
Yeah, they're all watching.
Yeah.
It's not like they're looking at their phones. You know why?
Yeah.
Because they didn't have phones.
Right, they didn't.
So. 1980.
They came here to be entertained, not entertained by their phones.
Exactly. So anyway, wrist locks abound and lots of reversals.
And I tell you that this reminds me of bowling on ESPN for some... Like,
what do you mean by that?
Because do you remember, like, in Tug of Wars on ESPN and stuff? Like, it's just that weird feeling of, like, I'm getting to see something different and unique.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And, like, they used to do that a lot on, like, cable, like, with random sports stuff.
Especially on ESPN, too. Yeah,
definitely.
And do you think that the people that watch the entire world of sports felt that way when the wrestling came on?
Well, actually, I got the feeling, even though that this is only a portion of the show, mm-hmm. I got the feeling that, like, this was on what was, like, a Saturday or Sunday?
I don't remember.
So you sat down with your pint of beer mm-hmm. and you said, I'm going to watch sports for the afternoon. And you, like you said, it was on till I think we looked this up. It's on like till like noon to four.
Yeah. Or
and then you have your dinner afterwards.
Yeah,
you spent the afternoon watching sports.
So do you have tea during this?
Yeah. Well, tea time, what is that? I mean, UK people have to tell me. I don't know what the official tea time is, but
yeah,
I thought it was like noon or something.
I don't know when it is. Anyway, I like this match too because it's presented as a real sport.
This was an awesome match because it was super technical.
Very technical.
It was all about escapes. That was like the story of the match.
It was.
Yeah.
No man really gets the upper hand as we head to round two. Some leg work by Saint to open it up. Quinn, you said to me, we should have a spot of tea while reviewing this.
We should. I mean, I wish this Coke here was, you know, some Limptons or something or whatever.
Liptons.
Sorry.
Anthony gets lured into breaking a hold. like Saint tries, he like feeds him his arm so he breaks the hold, remember?
Right. Yeah.
The announcer chuckles, the crowd claps. It's all very classy.
Yeah, and that was actually a really cool escape because he lured him into thinking his arm was cupped around his leg. But he wasn't.
It was
cool.
Very clever.
Yeah.
This is like watching a talented magician on the Ed Sullivan show. You know, like everyone's like, yes.
Yeah.
Very good.
It seems, unlike a lot of wrestling nowadays, it seems like an attraction.
It does.
Right? It's like I'm watching an attraction here and I'm being entertained.
Absolutely.
Like I'm watching a magician at work.
Yeah. No, this was great. Yeah. Then Saint tries to counter a body scissors by making Anthony fall on his back, but Anthony hangs on, so Saint wiggles out.
Right.
The announcer chuckles. The crowd claps.
Yes.
Very nice little pattern here.
Just a good sequences all around.
Great sequence. Wrist lock takedown by Saint into a head scissors. Anthony tries to leverage that and finally does. The crowd claps. Saint with a double underhook face bar into a double arm wringer. Anthony wiggles around and escapes.
Now it's getting dramatic. It's like it's tit for tat here.
There's a lot of tit, a lot of tat.
Yeah.
Single leg takedown by Anthony and the round ends. Round three begins.
So now we've gone two rounds and these guys can't get, nobody can
no
seem
upper
to
hand.
Get control here.
Nope, no points yet, nothing, no falls. Round three begins with a headlock takedown by Saint, some back and forth mat work, and then Saint traps him in a Rana pin to win round three. Yeah. So we get pinfall, finally.
By the champ,
Johnny Saint.
Very, very, very good work here.
Very good.
And I mean, at this point, I'm like, I wish I knew about this because this is awesome.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
Ring announcer Fred Downs asked for a nice round of applause for Johnny Saint.
That was great. Where the Orville Redenbacher dude comes in and he's like, and give a great round of applause for the champion. And they're like shaking hands with each other. Like the two combatants are shaking hands with each other. Like after every round, too. Like,
very respectful.
Yeah.
We get the start of round four, and we get a figure four arm lock by Bob Anthony.
Yeah, the rare.
Very rare. Saint escapes, and they both go to a standing position. Saint with an armbar takedown.
And I'm like, this is compelling.
It is compelling.
I want to know who wins.
I want to know how this goes. This is very interesting here.
Yeah.
So we get back to a vertical base and some more back and forth action until Anthony gets a pin. Anthony gets a pin.
Yes.
On the challenger.
Surprisingly.
Yeah.
Because you don't, like, on a regular show where we're from, you know, nobody gets a pin on the champion on Superstars or some crap.
So that ends round four and we're tied 1-1.
So now we've got a deadlock here. Here we go.
This is it. Round five begins with a takedown by Saint.
Still got two rounds left.
That's right. Five and six.
Yeah.
takedown by Saint into a chin lock. Anthony reverses standing position, Saint with a takedown and a lateral press attempt for one.
Mm.
It's really heating up here, Quinn. Yeah, it's getting very,
very, very interesting.
Very, very interesting. This has been a well-wrestled match. To give you an idea, folks, these are lighter guys. Obviously, this is for the World Lightweight Championship.
Yeah.
They're thinner guys.
But they can escape. That's kind of the special. That's like the angle here, right? Is that they're smaller, so
they can escape. Wiry.
Yeah, they can escape holds.
They wiggle. They flip.
Now it makes sense why they aren't wearing knee pads.
Why?
Because it'll get in the way when you're trying to escape. It'll, you know, cause friction.
Bulk.
Bulk.
The bulk. You don't want no bulk.
These guys are in speedos. They want to be able to get the hell out of these holds.
That's true. Very good point.
Yeah.
Very good point. So, as this match goes on, we get an arm ringer by Saint. He breaks it. Anthony with an arm ringer takedown of his own. Anthony tries the bridge pin again. Saint blocks it, gets him down. Anthony reverses Saint with an Irish whip into a roll up for the pin.
You win.
Holy crap. That was super exciting.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
We are not being sarcastic.
And this is awesome. The announcer comes out and he calls for a he says, let's have a nice round of applause for both men.
Shake hands. Winner and still champion, Johnny Saint. End of show.
End of show.
That took a turn.
Holy crap, it took a turn.
This was awesome.
We thought we were going to stumble on, like, fat Loch Ness and, like, fat Big Daddy stumbling around and botches and nonsense.
Right.
And what we stumble into is a really compelling program, and I can understand why they're trying to bring it back now, and I think the WWE thwarted it, but...
Well, you know them.
Yeah, but but still, I can see why there's even a demand for it. If you watch this, you know, growing up or whatever, this was kind of cool.
This was awesome.
Yeah.
For a fan of sports in the UK in the 60s, 70s, or 80s, this must have been something that you really looked forward to. We wouldn't know. We didn't have this.
It seems like it was a treat.
It seems like it was a real treat,
yeah.
Exactly, because you got to watch all different stuff. It was a variety show of sports, essentially.
Yeah.
Capped off by this wrestling segment late in the program.
Yeah.
Where you get to watch guys flip around and do all these things, and it's a spectator sport.
Right, and then even after that, then you get to see all the scores of all the soccer games that were that day. Like, there was, like, an ESPN, like, for the last 15 minutes, like, right after this was over.
Right, like a breakdown of everything, right?
Yeah.
So guess what, folks? We really like this.
I can't... We find some really bad crap, but like...
And we tried to.
We tried. We really thought we were going to get some junk here. Like,
but we're being fair.
Like, yeah. And I like when something takes a turn like this. It's actually really enjoyable. And I feel like I discovered, like, a new thing. Like, I'm like... I know a lot about wrestling. You know a lot about wrestling. Mm-hmm. But doesn't this feel like a whole totally different world that's like opened up to us? And like, hey, you know, maybe I'll throw out a world of sport
every
and see what that's like.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This was something I did not expect to be good.
Yes.
Whatsoever. And folks, here's the thing. If you know about this, let us know what you know, because we really don't know much.
Right.
And we're not afraid to admit that.
And is there any chronological way we can watch this, or... You know what I mean? Like,
right. From what we understand from our source on the other side of the pond, this video that we found on the interwebs was from 2008. So it was maybe maybe they reran it in the UK for a while.
It seems like they compiled some stuff.
Yeah, because if it's called World of Sport Wrestling number 53... Obviously, the show started in 1965.
Right. I thought we were watching like the second year of this or something. Like,
so maybe they reran a package of it for a while in the late
2000s. Maybe it's 53 of those packages.
That's what I'm thinking. So it's cobbled together.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, this was a great sampling.
The footage was in good shape, too, by the way. Yeah.
It was very different than American wrestling. It was very different. Look, we've reviewed some disparate styles, right? Like, we've reviewed WWF from the 70s, WWF from the 80s and 90s, NWA, WCW, right?
Yes.
NAWA.
Yeah.
AWA.
Secrets of Wrestling.
Secrets of Wrestling. Tag team the show.
Yeah.
AWF, right? UWF.
Yeah.
Memphis.
Japan.
Japan?
Yeah.
This is nothing like any of that.
No, it's completely different. It's a completely separate thing that you're not going to find anywhere. I highly recommend it, honestly.
Check out one of them.
Yeah, they're interesting, and it is an acquired taste. Like you saw how we reviewed it on purpose. We didn't want to just crap on it or praise it immediately. We wanted to give you guys
what we felt
going through it, and that was the joy of it was like not really understanding what was going on at the beginning, and then slowly, like, it just panning out into like a great thing. And honestly, that's how these matches, these round style matches, seem to have been done. And it's no surprise to me that a guy like William Regal, who was like doing this kind of thing for years over in Europe, came over to America. And one of the things he was known for was psychology, because he had just years and years of experience, like having to build a matchup from round one to round six, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, and it makes sense. It like actually puts some puzzle pieces in my life together about like British wrestling.
Well, there you go. So we hope you UK fans enjoyed that. You know, we hope all of our fans enjoyed that, obviously.
Yeah.
But what we want to know is, what the hell do you know about this?
Yeah.
And what is your Mount Rushmore in Death Valley? If you have any suggestions for future ones, let us know.
Yeah.
Do you want us to deep dive into anything? We will. We'll try. We'll do our best.
We'll do it. We don't care.
So you can reach us, of course, on Twitter at OVP Podcast. You can email us at ovppodcast@gmail.com. Of course, there's the Facebook group and our website, ovppodcast.com. You can find us on various things and leave us an iTunes review, Quinn.
Yeah, and we always want those iTunes reviews. Just get them out there and write what you think.
Write what you think. So, folks, have a great rest of your week. Have a great rest of the spring, because by the time we get to you next week on the 26th, it will be summer, and we will be talking to you about the world of retro wrestling. So until next time, have a great day.
See ya.
See ya.
This week, we would like to welcome a new sponsor, the makers of Left Guard Sports Stick and Sports Spray. Left Guard is the choice of dignified gentlemen, like Fatu and Sione of the Head Shrinkers.
Get over there.
Offensive, odoriferous emanations can be embarrassing for even the most civilized. For the elimination of the emanation, the solution is Sports Spray.
I admit.
When Sports Spray is inconvenient, there's a Sports Dish. Gentlemen know, new Left Guard Sports Stick not only has the great smell and long-lasting deodorant protection of Left Guard Sports Spray, but it also has... just a moment, stop that! Put that down, that's a deodorant, not a mouthwash! These chaps aren't at all civilized, you know? Oh my gosh! They were supposed to be civilized, I was told that! This is disgraceful! Stop it immediately! Well, Left Guard is a deodorant, not a snack food, folks. And it only goes to show that you can take the Head Shrinkers out of the jungle. Will you stop that?